Hello, food chain. This is Sharon Chitun, and I'm a food tech junkie and innovation nerd who loves a good story. This podcast combines all of my favorite vices into a deep dive about the problems our food system faces and the visionary people working on solutions. Today, we're joined by a very special guest, Christina Sand-Jacobson, the CEO of Swiss Food and Nutrition Valley. In this episode, we'll explore the vital role of ecosystems and collaborative efforts in addressing some of the most pressing challenges facing our food system today. From sustainability to technology integration, Christina will share her insights on how we can transform the landscape of food production and consumption through cooperation and innovation. Stay tuned as we unravel the complexities of food systems and discover the path forward together. Ready? Here we go.
Hi, Christina. How are you?
I am well. Thank you, Sharon. How are you?
I am well. Happy 2024.
And to you, a new year and new action for the food system, huh?
Absolutely. And I'm very curious to learn about all the wonderful things that you are doing, to have our listeners learn about your work, which is pivotal for us an ecosystem. Before we dive into all those wonderful things, can you give us a little bit of a background, your journey in the food industry, a little bit of who you are, and how you came to do what you're doing today?
Yeah, I would love to. And it's nice to have a moment to think back on that, where it all began and came from. So I grew up in Denmark in what I would call a normal family with a garden, lots of vegetables and fruit trees and bushes and a greenhouse. And my father was in the food industry. My mom came from the food industry and I spent a lot of weekends on the farm, in nature, in the fields. And little did I know that food was going to be my journey, but I did go on and study food science and technology. It took me into the corporate world, where I spent almost 15 years in a multinational. And yeah, that was fun. It was about chocolate and it was about living out my dream about producing a healthy chocolate. And at one point I stepped out to dedicate my time to motherhood. And that's when I started working with startups. And my eyes got open to a world of a not so perfect food system and the world of building businesses for higher purpose reason. And when I then moved on with my career, I decided the opportunity to bring these two worlds together, the corporate world, which I do love, and the entrepreneurial purpose-driven world together, that was going to be my journey onwards. And I'm in the middle of it now. So I think that's the short story of where I came from.
Yes. So by your work, what did you see? Because it happened to me as well, right? Like you, I wasn't working in food. I had an idea of what food was until you start to dive into and learn more and understand it. What were those pivotal experiences for you where you realized that intersection, that need to transform the food system, whether for sustainable, for human health and the health of our planet?
So it was when I joined an accelerator and I was scouting for startups all over the world for larger businesses to collaborate with them. And for every single pitch I heard, I learned about a new challenge and I got intrigued and started reading up on it or watching a TED talk about it. And the puzzles in the brick of where our food system is today and why we're here and what we need to do was coming together. So I thank that shift to all the amazing startups I had an opportunity to engage with and listen to and train and connect to larger corporates so that they could drive their impact. That was totally what happened.
And now you are the head of the Swiss Food and Nutrition Valley, and basically is Switzerland's food innovation ecosystem that includes all the research institutes, the companies, the startup scene. Can you give us a little bit of a background of what that is and what you expect to achieve?
Yeah. So Switzerland is a small country with 8 billion people, and we're very aware of that. But we like saying we might be a small country, but we're a very large food nation. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the innovation power behind food, you allude to yourself, the academic knowledge, the large corporates based here, the thriving startups, the research centers, the innovation curious citizens who are willing to explore and pay the legal frameworks and so on and so forth. There is a great opportunity for Switzerland to be a playground on trying out and developing things that will help us go towards a sustainable future and specifically sustainable food systems. And I always say that is both an opportunity, but it's also a job that we need to take on to, with all these tools and with all this energy and with all this knowledge and with all this innovation, to step up for the world and play our role in the food systems transformation. So that is what the Valley set out to do by setting up a not-for-profit association that is solely purpose-driven. We invited all actors, not just the value chain, but the whole ecosystem, for those who want to be a part of this movement and journey and future and want to do it in a collaborative manner. We invited them to come and join the Valley, where in the Valley you find a neutral space. You find a space where you leave competitiveness and the egos outside the door and you enter the ecosystem. And whether you're the world's largest food company or the smallest food company or an accelerator or a governmental body, that is quite a relief to go in and focus on what can we do next together and what is my large or small role in this. So that's what we're doing.
Yeah. And it's amazing. So from your perspective, how big of a role is collaboration and co-creation? Obviously, that's what you do, but towards solving some of the larger challenges of the future of food, or get it done at all, in my opinion.
So I think for everybody now here in 2024, we agree on we can only do the food systems transformations through collaboration. Working in silos results in we might solve a problem, but in the tail of that, we introduce 10 new problems for other entities in the value chain. So it's only through collaboration that we can go fast enough and that we can do it well enough and that we have any chance of doing it in time. And the great thing is that this is not really something that's up for discussion. And when we talk about collaboration, for example, in the Valley, we have companies, large global companies, who out on the marketplace are competitors, arch competitors. But in the Valley, they sit at the same table. They work on the same project for a future world. So it's quite admirable that people and companies have the ability to do that, because I believe in competition. It makes everybody do their best. And that's also how our society is built up. But when we talk about doing things right for a healthy planet and for healthy people, then we need to live together.
Yes, you cannot go at it alone. It's crucial to understand that it's not just about selling your drink or your chocolate bar, but it's about really solving some of the biggest challenges. And what are, in your opinion, like for you, what are the current most pressing challenges that we are facing today? And how is, whether high tech or low tech, how does that play into solving these issues?
Our food systems, and you will, the careful listener will hear, I always say it in pluralis, because there's not one. And they're very different when you look around the world. And I think we should always, when we talk about food systems, we should always pin needle, which food system am I talking about? Where am I geographically right now? Am I in Europe or am I in Africa or am I in the United States? But in general, the one thing that unites us all is the global warming caused by the greenhouse gas emission and the impact that has on the temperature rise and, as a consequence, the extreme weather conditions, failed harvests, droughts followed by floodings, And that is really worrisome, the migration of people to find place where they can do their agricultural practices is a big concern. And we know that the food system is contributing to more than 30% of the world's total greenhouse gas emission, which is, if we compare with the aviation industry, much scolded, and they're around 4% altogether. So it is a big job for us players in the food system to get that one down. I'm concerned about the oceans. We're 71% water surface on the planet Earth. We have acidification, we have the exploitation, the overfishing, the plasticification, all the plastic in our ocean, the temperature changes, confusing it. And although it seems like a different world to us human beings walking on land, we do know through our researchers that if the ecosystem of the oceans go down, we cannot survive.
Yes.
Then on land, biodiversity loss, I think that is something we will hear much more about. There will be, whereas companies and politicians talk a lot about the greenhouse gas emissions, we will hear more about biodiversity loss and the impact of that on the health. And moving away from the planetary health to the human health crisis, it is alerting that 4 billion people will be obese by 2035, half of the people's population. And obesity comes with a lot of health consequences and impact, comes with a lot of costs for the system. But I think the quality of life is the biggest concern here. And also bringing that to the extreme, that we know that food is actually responsible for more deaths than the tobacco industry, the alcohol industry, and sexual diseases altogether. So that is a concern. And where we have the population of the world's population getting too much calories in and wrong calories, we also have a quarter, currently 2 billion people, who do not have access to safe and nutritious food on a daily basis. And that is also increasing and very much of concern. But I think even though we can talk about problems and all the issues, I think there is one interesting light here, because the world has already, through its millions of years of existence, been witness to 5 mass extinctions. And some people, they put it very rough, saying we're headed to the 6th. But the good thing about this challenge we have right now is, whereas the others were external forces, in this case, we can actually do something about it. It's not external meteors that's going to bombard us, or an unknown ice age coming in, or volcanic eruptions that is out of our power. These challenges are, we know why they're here, where they come from, and it's from human beings' actions.
Yes.
Which is a good thing about this crisis that we're in, is that we can actually do something about it. We cannot just stand back and look while meteors are hitting the earth, or volcanic eruption is doing an extinction. These are challenges caused by us and our daily actions, and that we know actually what to do and how to change that. So I think that's very positive. Now, how do we do it? And how do we do it fast enough? And how do we get everybody on board? Citizens, politicians, industries, all the way through. That is, of course, the big question, and what we work, people like you and I and all the ecosystem people work day in and day out to try and do. But there is an opportunity, and I think that's why we should not stay awake at night, but we should jump out of bed in the morning and embrace that opportunity.
Yes, definitely. That's the big tamale, in a way, of how do we get people to understand that? And sometimes I feel it's like you have to be, in a way, blind or deaf not to see or hear the correlation between food and pretty much everything, whether it's the planet's health or human health. We've seen it with COVID, for example, in the US, on how malnutrition brought by the disease a lot faster. Obviously, people that are eating poorly are more exposed also to certain diseases, like type 2 diabetes or there are so many more immunitary diseases growing rampant or intolerances and allergies, right, than before. And those are so linked to how we eat that how you not realize that is a direct correlation. And other times I feel it's, even though it seems far, because you're not thinking what's happening to me directly, right? If there's a flood in a faraway land, it's not happening to me directly. We've seen it, at least in Southern Europe, happening in our land. Like, I live in Italy this year alone. There was the year before, it was complete drought. This year, complete flooding. And still people are not working towards it. So to me, I'm like flabbergasted. Like, it should be priority of the government's, not just a chit chat, but it should really be in the agenda to really make a transformation. And instead, it's all the same politics, and it's all.
And interestingly, we talk a lot about which technologies and AI and what's going to take us there where we can say now we have sustainable food systems. But I think the largest opportunity is what you're alluding to, behavioral science. As human beings, we are optimists and we are survivors. If, Sharon, truly, if everybody dove into the challenge of our food system, we would have a new pandemic and it would be called the food system depression. Yeah. We would not get out of bed. We would lie and cry if we really took this serious. But thankfully, our brains and bodies are wired to say, oh, it'll be all right. It'll be all right. Let's move on and let's go and get going. And that's where I think behavioral science and unlocking people's motivation to be a part of saving the planet and the people from the next mass extinction is something, an opportunity that we yet have to go into, because it's really down to behavioral change. We will lower the animal production if people stop buying or half buying or quarter out of quarter. We would see a lot of change in the food system if people change their behaviors, stop wasting foods, buy more local, increase their diversity and nutritional intake of grains, and so on and so forth. We talked about the challenges, and if we take that to opportunities, I see that as one of our biggest opportunities. Of course, it needs to be supported by policies, by responsibilities from food producers and retailers and education. And it's not one place, but I think people's actions is the one where we can the fastest and the best see an impact. Because if you and I decide to, as of tomorrow, I'm going to change these parts of my behavior, it has an immediate effect as of tomorrow.
Absolutely.
Say, let's develop further on cultured food. It's also a solution I strongly believe in, but it will take us another 10 years for that really to drive impact. So these are interesting things. And maybe if somebody is listening to this and don't know where to jump into the food system, my tip would be, can you please dive into behavioral science and see what we can do there? Because threat and being scared, it is Teflon for most people. And luckily, but motivation and engagement and going where the fun is, that is attractive. So let's bring the fun into the food system chains if we can.
Absolutely. And we can make it fun, right? I think there are so many things that we could do to make food fun that it should be a little bit more encouraged.
Because food is fun. It's alerting all our senses, and we say the way to somebody's love is through their stomach. We celebrate with food. We travel with food. We laugh over meals with friends. Food is fantastic. And I tend to say it's the best thing in the world. And we should not forget that.
Yes, we also create peace by breaking bread with people. So it is at the center of everything, food, right? A good meal, it's at the center of everything, and we should see it that way. But it has to be good junk food. So another big part of what you do are the growing, it's the price tag, right, on solving these challenges. Yes, it's true. If everybody, I'm a big believer, if everybody changed their behavior, also this would push big companies to change theirs, and it creates like that avalanche effect. But funding to drive innovation is critical. Let's go from the macro to from the big to small. A, what's the price tag on solving some of these big challenges? And B, then what's the role of investment and funding in this sort of the valley? And how do you seek to promote or facilitate those?
So in the big picture, this transformation, I like looking at it in a simple way, three steps. Let's find the problems. Let's develop the solutions. And let's, step three, let's drive these solutions for impact. And we actually have that price tagged by a professor at Cambridge. We know that identifying a solution, often through research, academic research, company research, or identifying a problem is around $1 million on average for a research project. Now, if we step into developing solutions, let's think startups going in with new technologies and bringing that to some sort of traction, we're talking anything between 10 to 100 million. But when we then need to scale it for impact and get it out big time, it's an investment of billions of dollars, euros, Swiss francs, you pick your currency, it's almost the same. And that is also where we're struggling. We actually do know a lot about the challenges, where they come from, what they are, how they're interlinked. We have a lot of amazing technology solutions out there ready to be scaled. But the scaling is where we're actually failing. The scaling is where we see the needles move on the different SDGs and on the greenhouse gas emission, whatever. And that is somehow difficult to find these billions of francs, because who is going to invest that? And there is actually a step, if we say we don't go to the solutions and implementing them at scale, but we just let it be. And that price tag had also been calculated. The people's mass migration, having to move because they cannot grow crops and feed themselves, all the help to places with flooding and drought and so on, the loss of harvest and so on. And that price tag is trillions.
Yes.
And who will pay this? Governments, through taxpayers' money. But it's, again, as you said before, it's too far away to feel real. So we don't really feel threatened by this trillions of dollars bill that's coming up for not changing our food system. So we need to unlock and find the billions for scaling with impact. And I think, again, here it's not one place. It's a collaborative effort. It's about moving some subsidies around to where it actually drives sustainable food systems instead of fostering the food systems of yesterday. It's about incentives and motivation for investors to go where it has an impact and where it actually gives us a future. And again, the citizens we cannot leave out. So industry, policy makers, investors, and citizens, we all need to come together on this one again.
Absolutely. And who has the big pockets, if not for governments and big corporates, right, or the big funds to come together and put...
I would say it's a great quote last week at the Vest, where it was said that the politicians, they do know what to do to get it right with our food systems. They just don't know how to get reelected once they've done that. And you can laugh, you can cry, or you can just think, how crazy is that, that we've set up systems where you cannot do what's right because you risk not having this voice anymore.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what is right, since you brought it up, what are those changes or initiatives that you like to see at a national or global level, policy-wise, to better support on these food systems of ours?
Yeah. So one thing is more transformational funds. incentives from, let's start with the agriculture industry, supporting the farmer who wants to go into more sustainable practices and produce to try that out and eventually make it a stand on its own sustainable business, both financially and environmentally and for the people around. But that cannot stand alone, because if the farmer starts producing a lot of peas instead of an animal production, there needs to be takers of this. So it means also the retailer needs to step up here and promote different new dishes with these greens and favorable cost from buying this, and education of people and the whole restaurants which are run by the government, be it hospitals or schools or elderly homes, that everybody throughout the value chain takes a stand and steps up and support this. And of course, as I said before, we need the consumers and citizens to be well aware that their actions actually matter. So we have takers. So I think funding should be shifted to support sustainable food systems. And it's dangerous to talk about taking away the existing subsidies from animal farming and whatever. And there are places in the world where animal farming makes sense in feeding populations, but not to the extent we're doing it today. I would like to see that happen.
Absolutely. And also, I would say not to the extent of how much animal feed we produce and produce it. That's a whole other.
Yeah. When we know 70% of what we produce on our fields worldwide is actually being consumed by animals, and we're struggling to find out how to feed the world within the near future, then that's another motivation to make a shift.
Yes, and the tens of thousands of tons of fresh fish that's going to animal feed as well, with the problem of overfishing, to me, it's a little, everything is counterintuitive.
Yeah.
So, considering the challenges, you're located in Switzerland, and what do you guys, what are the strategies and the actions that the Valley and its partners are employing to ensure the resilience and sustainability of the Swiss food system and at large every other system that it touches?
Yeah. I think the interesting part here is the at large, because even if we were to change the Swiss food system into a sustainable one, it would not save the world. It wouldn't matter. We're too small. So it's really about unleashing the innovation and that we have in Switzerland to the greater world. And there are different ways of doing that. It's teaming up with large global organizations on rolling out, let's say, a precision farming technology, which will reduce the use of pesticides and herbicides and insecticides, but also reduce the carbon footprint. And rolling that out in, let's just say, 10 of the G20 countries. We know the G20 countries, 19 of them, are responsible for 80% of the global greenhouse gas emission. So imagine if we could take one super strong technology and get it rolled out in half of these countries, the impact that could drive. That is something we would like to do and build up a system where it's not just Swiss technologies and precision that comes out, but from all over the world, the big impactful solutions should have a system on how they can drive impact at scale. But of course, another thing we see is we're the home country to Nestlé. Yeah. And Nestlé has a global reach, being the world's largest food producer. And Nestlé is a partner of the Valley, actually a founding member. So this collaboration with startups and SMEs and technologies, instead of just having it implemented in three cities in Switzerland, teaming up with Nestlé is the biggest opportunity for any technology to really drive impact. And we also have Tetra Pak, the largest packaging supplier here and a part of the Valley, Givaudan, Bühler, DSM Firmenich, ADM. So real global companies. And we try to foster this collaboration between startups and these companies, especially to accelerate and to drive the impact. So that's another thing. And then I'll mention it again, the citizens try to find out what motivates, what can we do, new systems. and share that openly. I think that's another key, Sharon, is that we do not work secretive here. Mm-hmm. One of my very inspiring examples from a retailer in Norway, actually an online retailer, where they decided they were trying to lower their own carbon footprint, but they saw they needed the shoppers to help them. So on the receipt, you get the end where the milk costs so much and the apple so much, and this is your total. Next to that, they had the carbon footprint of each item. Yes. So in the beginning, of course, to the shopper, this was just a number and didn't mean much. But one could see that the red meat had a really high number and the avocado was also higher than the local apple. And over just a few months, this retailer saw a significant drop in the sale of red meats and a significant increase in local produce. But it didn't hit their shopping basket size. So it wasn't that they were losing revenue. But it's a mystery to me why the retailers have not adopted this. It didn't come with a big price. It was the citizens were not told what to do or punished or had to pay off their carbon footprint. But it was simply an awareness tool that made one reflect and change habits. So things like that, we should also push for implementation worldwide.
Absolutely. These kind of projects also were successful in the Nordics, for example. But why do you think they are not, I would say, employed more in different parts of the world? Do you think it's more of a question of the bigger lobbies or consumer like associations that don't want to see decrease in anything? Or like, why do you think that we don't have this in every single supermarket, for example?
Mm. I think one thing is the simple knowledge exchange is missing, because then following, I have been talking to some large retailers and they do you know about this exam? And they had never heard. They had of sustainability in two cases, had never heard about this. So I think we need more of this best practice sharing and knowledge exchange. And then there might be 999 reasons why not to do it. Yes, it will have an initial price to implement this system. Yes, there is a risk of, I don't know, loss of profit. But the one reason why we should do it should weigh bigger than anything else. And we also know that if, in this case, retailers, but also food producers, if we cannot figure this out on our own, then eventually the policymaking will step in and direct us and dictate where we have to go, because there is no alternative. So I think, again, incentivizing and trusting in people that we all want to do the best for planet and people, and exchanging and freely sharing these best practices is the best thing we can do.
Absolutely. Totally agree with you on that. And how about like other potential projects? Even there was news of a big association being formed around regenerative farming, for example. You mentioned Nestle. Nestle has done some pretty vocal commitments on the matter. How does the Valley support and accelerate the agenda of regenerative practices, regenerative agriculture, and its integration in our food system?
Yeah. So you mentioned Nestle, who's come out and said that 50% of their sourced food ingredients needs to be sourced from regenerative farming by 2030. So within reach, which is a very bold and strong commitment. And they put aside 1.2 billion Swiss francs to drive that agenda. In the Valley, we're teaming up with the Earthworm and a part of their strategic committee and guiding and setting out pilots or that are hopefully going to grow like rings in the water very fast, supporting farmers in knowledge for these practices and also shifting over. It's not that easy. The yield needs to be there. But one thing I find particularly interesting about regenerative farming is the indication that regenerative farmed crops, so food that has grown in nutritious soil, also have a higher nutritious content. The European apple today has only 5% of the vitamins and trans minerals and all the great stuff compared to an apple in the same place 30 years ago.
Yep.
So In other words, you need to eat 20 apples today to keep the doctor away and not just an apple. And if we see that the regenerative farming practices can increase the nutritious value, it also means we actually need to go back to eating less to get nutrition. The old model of people and food was get enough calories in to survive the winter and to stay functional and have the energy to do the hard fields work. But today is much more about, are the vitamins and minerals and micronutrients and trace minerals, are they present? And is your body getting what it needs to function? And with the obesity going up, the vast majority is getting enough kilocalories. And that's why regenerative farming as a practice also for nutritious health, not just for the environmental health, is a very exciting one. So in the Valley, it's really one of the topics we want to see also as a farming nation. We have a lot of great farmers here, and also farmers have been much scolded for what they do to animals and what they do to nature, but no farmers, no food. And I think an important thing here is also to bring them back to this hero status or feeding us, because farmers love nature, they love their animals, they know much more about it all than the rest of us, and we need them on board totally for the food system transformation.
This is a really good point, because at the end of the day, I feel that's my point of view, that farmers, like consumers, were at the two ends of this losing battle, because there is a lot of pressure of making more, making cheaper, making faster. And the farmer, we look at how much the farmer earns throughout the transition of like how much a product is sold and the margins. The farmer gets really like very little of that, let's say that earning. There's a lot of passages. And at the end of the line, the consumer, for all that we already said, farmers, like, a farmer that does things the way that it should, and I think most farmers want that, should be considered a hero, right? He is the one that is getting up at 6 a.m. or 5 a.m. or 4 a.m., whatever, and harvesting and doing the hard labor and really digging into the soil and planting food, watching food grow. It's at these two extremes that we need to elevate, right? And that food industry in the middle that needs to understand that these two should be elevated. Like, we have a responsibility towards the grower and the consumer, in my opinion. That's missing. That's a
And also here, Sharon, about the bringing the consumers or the citizens closer to the farming. I'm trying to make a habit out of, when I drink my morning coffee, to take a moment and travel to whatever coffee farm in Colombia or where it is, and see that farmer who picked the coffee cherries and who brought them together and bagged them, and they were pulped and they were roasted and somebody put them in beautiful bags. And, you know, all this journey that the beans have taken for me to enjoy my cup of coffee in the morning. I think also this appreciation of produce, and when my coffee beans then are expired, that I don't just toss them in the bin, but I say they're still good enough to drink. And this appreciation of the love and energy and whatever that has been put into the food production, that is something that, when you talk about, we're always in a rush and we need to produce more and better and go faster and a quick meal and whatever. A little bit of time to reflect, what was the journey of the food that I am privileged to enjoy today, would probably also do something good for the food system.
Absolutely. On a sadder note, we still live in a world where parts of our food system are driven by slavery. It's a big stain on all that we are talking about, but a wrong that we definitely need to right. And I think part of this transformation, creating better food systems, is really transforming the human element as well.
Yeah. And that's why I think digitalization is going to help us a lot in these, and AI and technologies, with the transparency of me seeing who did pick my coffee here and where was it carried, with blockchain and so on. That will increasingly be transparent and support consumers in making the choice as they can do.
Absolutely. And how do you envision the Valley's role in continuing this legacy while addressing contemporary challenges in food and nutrition? So how do you see that happen?
We are still just a baby in the way that we were founded just over 3 years ago now. And what we need to do is have some impactful projects on lease. And here I really, again, coming back to where we drive on lease technology in the world where it matters. That is the big win for the Valley. But with every dialogue and exchange and the networking that we do and the connection of great players who together can do even greater stuff, those are the daily victories that we have and we're getting better at. And people are getting better at reaching out and also receiving. So when we do make an introduction, we rarely get a no. People want to help, they want to collaborate and do it. But it's even though the coffee beans are still on the shelf in every supermarket, we are very aware that time is running. And every year or month or day that we do not get closer to our goals, we build a higher mountain of challenges that we need to overcome in the food system. We say, sit down, take a moment, join the food. And at the same time, it's really difficult to stay patient with driving the impact here. And we also feel in the ecosystem a little bit of the impatience are driving. Okay, now let's now just do it. Can somebody please just do it? We know what to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And another part, we spoke about the technology, the funding, the policy, but I think a big part of it is also business models, right? If we don't change, and there's a lot of talk of regenerative business models, regenerative society, regenerative capitalism, those business models need to change.
Okay. Yeah. And I think just how we look at economy, the old economy that we talked top line and bottom line. And this morning on the Swiss news, there was another food company's results coming out and being shared. And it was again, how much did the business grow and how much did the win grow? And not a word about how did the environmental impact get improved? How did the impact and drive for a more nutritious portfolio grow? So the economy of the old economy, the bottom line economy, needs to be integrated with the environmental economy. We know how to price tag CO2 today, and also the human health impact economy of a given portfolio. And that movement alone, and some companies actually do that in the reporting. It used to be two different reports, one for who wants to read about the profit and one who wants to read about impact. But now some more and more companies are actually integrating the two reports and into a number of it. And I would love to see more of that. So everybody in finance and financial modeling, if we could accelerate here. And also for all the shareholders that could become a motivator of investing this transparency. I think that could move things. Because at the end of the day, we do all pay through our taxes the price of these pollutions, whether it's for the world or the people. We pay for the health insurances. We pay for cleaning up the CO2. And the devastating impact it has on nature. So why not get it price tagged as source? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And to your point, there's been also a lot of talk about true cost accounting, right? The true cost of food, which people don't realize, right? It's less costly to get an avocado or a piece of red meat in a store, but the price tag on the planet, on people's health, is much higher than the local apple.
Yeah.
The local regenerative grown apple is more expensive. So we are in a backward system.
Totally. Right?
How do we change that? And I think that comes down to creating exactly that, a system where you actually pay the true cost of food. What's your take on that?
there's been a study here in Switzerland showing that the true cost of the average food in Switzerland is a 2x. So we should actually be paying double for everything. And just a side note, food is already expensive in Switzerland compared to our surrounding countries. And it's a difficult one, but a very important one. And maybe awareness is enough as a first instance. Because when I buy a steak, I not only have here the environmental footprint of the methane emission from this cow and all the food that has been produced for it to eat, I also have an impact on my health, especially if I eat a lot of them. And finally, I have, through my taxes, paid into subsidies in Switzerland. It's like almost 3 billion Swiss francs that go to farmers and a lot of this into animal production. So it's a huge cost that I am paying apart from the $10 that I pay in the supermarket. And I think it's nearly a human right to be aware of this and to be able to have a say in this. And also when the supermarkets go in and do competitive pricing and have a lower margin on the unhealthy products, unhealthy for people and unhealthy for climate, is that correct? Is that responsible? Is that, should that be legal? It's the true cost. It would be wonderful to implement. And then we have with the inflation and people are getting hurt on their money saying, okay, now I need to buy cheaper food because the inflation is going up and I cannot afford that. I went to visit some museums recently and one of them showed that 100 years ago, you could buy a liter of milk for an average hourly salary. And today you can buy 55 liters of milk for your average hourly salary. So I am questioning, is our food expensive enough? Because through our food, we buy our health and the climate health. And good food comes with a price. So there, I think there's another challenge there. And true cost would definitely, with the transparency, with the measures behind, help us understand this better. And then there are measures again that the retailers are gateholders for. I heard that in Germany, two retail groups will now do for a limited time, they will take the VAT off fruit and vegetables to increase that consumption. And I believe in Sweden, it was done for a longer time. And those are some of the initiatives that we really should support and make transparent to support people better in eating what's good for you and good for the world and not go thinking, oh, this is cheap. Let me get that.
Yes, totally agree. Can you give us, let's say, reflecting on this past year, on 2023, what have been some of the most significant developments and happenings? And can you give us a little bit of a predictions of looking, what will 2024 bring? What trends do you foresee and how might these impact the value chain?
Yeah, looking back, to me, 2021 was the year we stopped discussing, do we have a food system crisis or not? It was, the awareness was there. So it's okay, now we all agree, let's move on with it. And interestingly, we now also have it, for example, at the COP28, it was put up there saying, this is what we need to solve, fuel and food. And then we have it. I think that's a win that food systems is on the top of every nation's, every global association's agenda. And what we will see and have to see happening here in 24 is the action. Mm-hmm. Yes, we still need to measure and report to have something and send us, but let's start doing because there's so much we can do. And doing both means in farming practices, in industry practices, in policy makings, and having the courage to put that forward because we know it's needed. We cannot discuss that. We cannot discuss the data anymore. We cannot say, okay, that climate change is not real. Our food system is not a challenge here, a part of the problem. It's time for action. And that is what I really want to see both in the Swiss Food and Nutrition Valley, but also all around the world. And Then the question always comes, but who? Who is going to do this? And the answer I like to do is it's all of us. It's everybody needs to take time and say, what can I do better? And where can I do it better? And where can I team up? Some might be able to do some investment in promising early stage startup. Some might have the power for their big company to change the canteen practices. All of us are citizens, and we're all either with our daily choices a part of choosing to be a part of the problem or a part of the solution. And I'm not encouraging people to go to extreme because that will fail. You cannot go from a meat lover today to becoming a vegan tomorrow. But do the little that you can do. One meat-free day. Try and plant-based milk in your muesli. You barely taste it there. Coffee might be different. So really take a moment to reflect. And especially, I want to give our politicians courage to take a moment to consider, what do they want written on their gravestone? I was re-elected for so and so much time, or I made a difference. And I hope, of course, that they would want to leave a legacy and drive this impact. So, yeah, it's time for action. It is, Sharon.
Absolutely. So my last question may be a little bit redundant, but obviously your passion is so evident. I ask this to all of the people I interview. If you had a magic wand and you could do one thing, be it an action, an invention, a shift, anything, what would you do? Here's the wand.
Thank you. Can I keep it?
What?
Well, I think I would throw a magic spell across the world and equip everybody, all human beings, young and old, with the ability to do what's right in wherever they live in the world, to drive this. For our place, it will be to reduce red meat consumption, to stop wasting our food and throwing it away, to change these habits. And another place of the world, it would be to send the kids to school more and instead of the fields, and of course getting paid well for their crops. I would empower 8 billion people to have the knowledge and to do what's right. That's what I would do.
That's amazing. That's really amazing. So I guess we're out of time, and thank you for that, by the way. If anybody wants to learn more about the Swiss Food and Nutrition Valley, where should they go?
Yeah, we actually have every month a virtual session called Meet the Valley, where anybody who wants to hear what we do or talk food system is welcome to dial in. And then, of course, our LinkedIn page and our webpage, you can see what is happening. So that would be our pleasure. And we do also have a community called Friends of the Valley with a quarterly newsletter that anybody can sign up to. So lots of good ways to get engaged with Swiss Food and Nutrition Valley.
And that's, hopefully we'll see more and more people get engaged with your wonderful organization and with yourself. Congrats on everything.
Thank you, Sharon. And thank you for what you're driving for the global food systems. It's very admirable.
Thank you. Ciao.
Want a deep dive into food innovation? Subscribe to the Food Tech Junkies series. Tune in and listen to the industry's champions, whose mission is to reinvent our future by collaborating and disrupting the status quo as a way to rebalance our planet and our daily lives. For more great food and ag tech content, visit our website at www.edibleplanetventures.com. And don't forget to follow us on social media.